Good morning. This will be our first session. My name is Sydney Stoops, and I'm currently a PhD student in the Pharmacology Department. For this first session, we're joined by three speakers who will present unique perspectives to drug discovery and diagnostics in the pharmaceutical and biotechnology industries. Our first speaker today will be Dr. Aris Economides. Dr. Economides joined Regeneron Pharmaceuticals in 1992, where he currently holds the position of senior director and leads two groups, the Genome Engineering Technologies and Skeletal Diseases TFA. He earned his Bachelor of Arts in Natural Sciences and Mathematics at Bennington College in Vermont. He then went on to complete his PhD in biochemistry at Michigan State University. Following his PhD, he joined Regeneron Pharmaceuticals as a postdoctoral fellow and has since worked his way up to his current position that he holds. In brief, Dr. Economides has been the co-inventor of a variety of technologies, including cytokine trap technology, as well as velocigene technology. More recently, he has been spearheading the development of new methods for the generation of transgenic mice using back and transgene vectors, and has also pioneered a new method for generating conditional alleles. So if you could please join me in welcoming Dr. Aris Economides.
So I was going to wear black, really, but all of a sudden, I don't know, I put the black shirt on this morning, and then I grabbed the red shirt in the end. So, but tonight, I will wear a black shirt for the dinner. So it's great to be here. Actually, it's a repeat visit for me. I've been here, I think, twice already. And I hope that I can follow with something that's somewhat interesting. I don't think I can come anywhere near as what you just heard before. And as you can tell, I'm somewhat boring. I've stayed in the same place for, I don't know, 17 years now. However, I think in my brain I lead a rather full and interesting life. And I think I've managed to stay on the creative edge, if not at Regeneron, if not in a worldwide way, at least within the small world of Regeneron. So Regeneron is a biopharmaceutical company that's based in Tarrytown, New York, and you can see up there on the map. We're about 26 miles north of Manhattan. And mirroring what the first speaker said, I moved there because I wanted to be in New York. And Regeneron offered the opportunity of employment in a place where I actually geographically wanted to be located. So the real reason for me being there was actually to be in Manhattan. But then I got completely drawn into what I ended up doing for a living. I should point out that the company was founded by a neurobiologist, Dr. Slipher, who really had a vision, and the vision was to try to do something for patients for which there was really nothing out there, particularly patients with neurodegenerative disorders. But things didn't work out exactly as we wanted them, and now we've become really an therapeutic antibodies company. This is our headquarters. Actually, it's one half of what it is because there's another building back this way, another building around the corner. And we moved there actually less than a year ago. The company was really founded on several principles that we try to stay true to, and I think this is quite important because we wanted to create an organization that would actually have long-term and staying impact and take things from A to Z, starting from very basic discovery, which was actually a point that we're criticized about. We used to be called a research boutique, but really with a long-term vision, and maybe this goes back to what was said before, going for the long-term rather than the short immediate gratification, the long-term vision being of starting with very basic research very much like the research that you do here at Vanderbilt or at UAB or any other university, but transforming this vision and this research into actual drugs that become used by patients to affect positively human disease. And I think we've stayed true to this. And just to underline the point that we are committed to research. Most of you may actually know us from our publications. These are actually covers in different scientific magazines like Cell, Nature, Genetics, and so on and so forth. And Regeneron was the place where some of the molecules that were really important for neurobiology actually were discovered, like the neurotrophic factors and the and their receptors. And we've continued on this, although we don't publish as much as we used to. But I think that's going to change as we are now growing even more. We have a very strong financial position. I don't want to bore you with this, but effectively we're good at least for another 5 years or maybe 10. And I think we're going to have continued funding for the long term. Now, the problem that we're trying to tackle is actually very nicely outlined here. A typical discovery to market process takes about 20 years. As a matter of fact, the project that I worked on, the cytokine traps, I started working on them in September of 1992 when I started my postdoc. I had proof of concept in mice by 1995. The paper that was published on this work was in 2003, well after my postdoc was completed, which is something that, of course, you cannot do in academia, but you can do it in industry. But it was not until 2008 that actually the first cytokine trap was approved as a product by the FDA. So in some ways, it was a bit shorter than the typical 20-year scheme here. But one of our objectives, actually, as you will see, is to try to shorten this as much as possible. So we really aim to start at the very beginning here and take it all the way to the end. And it's actually quite rare because most industries don't do that. They actually have to come in at different spots here and be somewhat more opportunistic. So this is a very brief view of our pipeline. And what you're looking at is actually the latest stuff. So the IL-1 trap that I'm going to talk a little bit about, also called ARCALYST, was approved in 2008, as I said before, for a very, very rare disease called cold-associated inflammatory syndrome. It's in phase 3 trials for gout. Actually, it passed one trial with flying colors, and we're now trying to decide how to move forward. And then there's another trap, the VEGF trap, in eye and also in oncology. That's in late stage. But our new pipeline, the newer stuff, as you'll notice here, are monoclonal antibodies. And this is a very important point because antibodies are really the hottest and probably most important class of biologics out there. So the question, of course, will come up, why did you switch from traps? And this will become apparent as I go forward here. So when I came into the lab as a postdoc, I had a very, very simple idea that was based on observing a fundamental molecular biology or biochemical discovery in the lab, that there's a whole class of cytokines that utilize heteromeric receptors comprised of an alpha and a beta subunit. And when the cytokine binds this alpha subunit, then the beta subunit comes over. There's an affinity conversion step going from nanomolar affinity in this complex to a picomolar affinity here. And I hypothesized, along with George Yancopoulos and Neil Stahl, that if we would mimic, if we could mimic this complex here, we would create a high-affinity ligand trap that was very specific for a cognate cytokine. And this was actually borne out very nicely in the lab. Without going into a lot of details, because that would be a whole other one-hour-long talk, what ended up happening with this was to create something that looks like this, where you have a tandem single-chain array of an alpha and a beta component fused to the Fc. That's what our traps look like. And the first one that made it to the clinic, and actually the only one that in the end made it to the clinic, it was a cytokine trap for interleukin-1. The trap was approved for this very rare disorder that is called cold-associated periodic syndrome, CAPS. But there's actually a whole bunch of other syndromes that are related, and they all arise from a mutation in a gene called NALP3 over here, which regulates caspase-1, which in turn regulates the conversion of pro-IL-1 to mature IL-1. So the activated NALP3 activates caspase, which activates overproduction of IL-1, and you can see here in the picture of this baby, all this, these hives, And that's just the tip of the iceberg. The people that have this disease are actually very, very, very sick and very miserable. And here's one piece of data from our clinical trial showing you that cytokine trap can ameliorate completely the combined symptom score. And these are the testimonials. Actually, one example of a testimonial from one patient where they had to fill out a questionnaire about how this disease affected their lives. And you can read here for yourselves. Basically, the take-home message is that these people really don't have a normal life. When they take the trap, they become... Oops, that's really interesting. Something happened here. Oh, no, it's okay. They become very normal, kind of like us. And as a matter of fact, we have a patient working at Regeneron as a summer intern, and you wouldn't be able to tell that there's anything physically wrong with this person. So if traps work so well, then why switch to antibodies? And the reason is that they're incredibly hard to manufacture. So it's not that the technology is flawed fundamentally, it's that in practice it's very, very hard to make traps for all the different cytokines. Plus, they are limited, after all, to cytokines. So we always wanted to work with therapeutic antibodies because they really represent a great opportunity to go very specifically after biological targets. And in a very funny way, again, my career was intertwined with that development, but from a very different kind of unexpected opening, which was born by a very nagging problem that I had in the lab, which was to be able to make knockouts. And you would think, oh my God, that should be very easy. But back in the days that I wanted to make knockouts, which was, again, back in 95, it wasn't that easy at all. And we were actually one of the first companies to ever make a knockout mouse. And out of this frustration, this technology called Velocigen was born, and I was, again, very much involved in this personally. And the power of this technology is the fact that it utilizes very, very unusual kind of vectors to do the targeting. And I don't want to bore you with the details, but the bottom line is that this technique, which is actually described in this paper here, allows one to replace very, very big chunks of one genome with another. So you can either make regular knockouts where you cut out a piece of a gene and you replace it, let's say, with a marker, or you can actually replace big chunks of one part of a genome without of another. And this presented this with an opportunity, and the opportunity was to humanize the variable regions of the antibody encoding loci in the mouse genome. So what is shown here in red is mouse sequence, and they're actually the constant regions and the regulatory elements on the genome, on the mouse genome, of the Ig loci. So this is for the heavy, and this is for the light, just the kappa chain shown here. And what we did is we replaced, and shown here in blue, all the variable regions, the Vs, the Ds, and the Js, on both chains, on both set of genes, with a corresponding human. That in of itself was a technical tour de force, and it was empowered by this ability to use back-test targeting vectors. And again, I don't have time to go into in detail. I'm giving a talk about this tomorrow in case anybody wants to come to something more technical. But the amazing thing about this is that now it allows us to generate completely human antibodies through a combined process of Velocimmune, Velocimouse, and some other technologies that I will cover very briefly. And the proof is in the pudding that if you look at what happens to other humanized Ig loci mice, you can see here that they have an abnormal immune system, but ours are completely normal, and they generate good antibodies. And I have an example here from the work in the therapeutic focus area that I lead, which is skeletal biology, where we created an antibody using Velocigen to a target that's been actually widely studied and for which there's a late-stage, actually approved now, therapeutic antibody available. And what you can see here, ours compares with a competitor very, very nicely based on affinity, but also on bioactivity shown here. as well as what it does in vivo. And again, I don't want to bore you with the details. The take-home message is that we have these technologies. They're developed in-house. And it's through this interaction, and I'm going to skip for the sake of time, it's through this interaction of technology centers with the therapeutic focus areas that we strive to develop therapeutic targets from the discovery stage all the way to the actual therapeutic antibody. So this is a listing of the tech centers. I'm actually very, very involved with this, and primarily this one, which is really my genome engineering technologies group, and the skeletal biology TFA, which I lead, but there's a whole bunch of other therapeutic focus areas that I think cover pretty much everything that other biotech and pharmaceuticals companies do. Now, I want to switch for the last 5 minutes and talk about what people who are beginning their careers would be looking at if they were to come to a company like Regeneron. And so I have a few slides on this, and they're very practical in nature. So what kind of jobs are available in places like Regeneron? So the first job one might entertain is the typical postdoc, and it's really no different from what would happen in an academic setting, except that you probably typically have more resources and more mentoring, and you would end up working in a more team-oriented environment, which is somewhat unusual. This kind of postdoc also would allow you, if you wanted to move on back to an academic track, it's exactly the same thing. You would publish as you would normally do in an academic setup. There is another type of postdoctoral position, which is that of a pharmaceutical postdoctoral scientist. And in this case, you're really working on things that are not so important from the standpoint of opening up new venues of investigation in an academic kind of way. But it would be more akin to what you would end up doing if you were to stay in biotech and or pharmaceutical industry. Further down the line, there are positions for scientists and staff scientists, and the scientists would require that you already have a postdoc, and the staff scientist that you've already done some work after your postdoc. What is different between academia and industry as far as science goes? The one thing that was clear to me when I joined Regeneron, it was actually almost an in-your-face instant realization, is that we carry our projects at a bigger scale. So everything takes place in a team-oriented setting, and teams work towards common goals. And there is less hierarchy, although somebody may be called a senior director like me. These hierarchies completely break down when you come together as a team from different groups. And sometimes, it doesn't really matter what your title is. You're really part of a team. And I find this actually quite refreshing. And the other, of course, big difference is that you're really doing research that is imminently translatable. So there are a few things that you should keep in mind. One is that you'll have access to far more resources, equipment, and core facilities than anywhere in academia. You'll be required to work on projects of the company's choosing, so that's one thing that you have to keep in mind. That doesn't mean you have no input, but you may be asked to actually do certain things that you might not be wanting to really do if it was your choice. And you might be asked to actually drop something and switch to something new, depending on vagaries that I would be happy to discuss with you. I don't really have time to go into. So there are some myths that I would like to try to bust. This is something that I think is less and less the case. You have failed if you don't pursue an academic position. I think this is really not true. The people that I work with, I consider them really quite amazing scientists, and I'm very happy to interact with them, of course. My working day, nobody's working day, is 9 to 5. As a matter of fact, I usually start at 6:30 and finish at 6:30, sometimes 7:30, and then I do a little bit more work at home later on. Compensation is not dramatically better than academia. So if you start as a scientist, you'll be compensated at the same level as an assistant professor. The only thing, though, is that you also have stock options. We strive to publish, so the idea that you won't publish is basically wrong. And I should also point out that increasingly now we see people that can move back and forth from an industrial setting to an academic setting. And, for example, Richard Flavel and Vicky Rosen are two examples that come to mind. Now, I just want to finish with a few words about what would make you successful for working at a place like Regeneron. We do expect people to come in who come in to be team players. This is very, very important. We're thoroughly a team-oriented environment. You have to be able to get interested in a wide variety of different scientific areas and really learn. And as a matter of fact, I have colleagues who started as neurobiologists and now are doing cardiovascular research or musculoskeletal research and so on and so forth. It is absolutely key that you have good analytical and communication skills. And communication is also important. I mean, the one thing I hate the most is when somebody does some great work and they never tell anybody and you don't know about it. That doesn't do anybody any good. So just being a good scientist is not enough. You have to communicate. And the other thing that's really quite important is that don't worry about your exact skill set. What is more important than the actual skills is your competencies. So you can contribute your particular talent and expertise as long as you can apply it to a common goal. And if you are successful, so that was my case, for example, with the IL-1 trap, lots and lots of people are going to work on your project, and it's going to take a life of its own. So I'm going to end there, 20 minutes and 10 seconds. All right. Thank you.